Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. So we're going to start with another essay from 80 Things to Do When You Turn 80, and I will remind you it doesn't just involve those of us who are 80. This one is called Losing My Teeth by Donald Hall. Donald is 87, or was when this book was published. He's author of Essays After 80 and the Selected Poems of Donald Hall. When I was 85, my last teeth wiggled loose in my bottom jaw and I was toothless. For decades, an upper plate had sufficed, but now I needed a lower if I were to gnaw meatballs into my gullet. Dental machinery is difficult for me because my jawbones and gums are so thin that the hardware can't find a purchase. My uppers stay stuck with a touch of glue, but not the lowers. My tongue flails up through the dental horseshoe and the plastic teeth fly out even though I have applied a pound of adhesive. Sometimes they slip loose while I'm chewing in a restaurant. I hold a napkin to my face and tuck a loathsome, slimy, pink object into a jacket pocket. Other diners at Pietro's or the Millstone gag as they avert their eyes. Between meals at home, I keep my lowers on a shelf beside my blue chair, and every day I lost them. I lost them because I couldn't stand them. Since I don't go outdoors, they had to be nearby. I don't have a dog that eats dentures. If I walked a dog every day, I would break two hips. My cat's mouth is too small. Each time I lost my teeth, I stared at every tabletop and shelf top. I looked at places where they couldn't possibly be, and once or twice, that's where they were. My trainer, Pam, comes Tuesdays and Thursdays to stride me on a treadmill and punish me with weights. Once, as I was pacing through cardio, my teeth shot out. I tucked them into a small tray beside the treadmill's panel of knobs and buttons. Did I hide them on purpose? I gummed my food for 2 days until Pam came back. Only a woman can find what I lose. A few years ago, I spent 3 months in New York. I had my own teeth then and never replaced them. But I wore bifocals. And when I couldn't find them, I telephoned my assistant, Kendall, in New Hampshire, and she told me where they were. I don't lose my bifocals now because I no longer wear them. I won't tell you why. Once I was in my bedroom when the telephone rang on the far side of my bed. I was talking to my investment guy, Jeff, when my teeth flew out. Talking often flies them out. Linda sleeps on that side of the bed and found them. Another time, I couldn't find them anywhere, and Linda was soon to arrive. My fecklessness shamed me. I remembered putting them on top of my rollator under a throwaway piece of cardboard next to a mug of cold coffee. I tossed the cardboard, set the mug beside the coffee maker, and when I got back to my blue chair, my teeth were missing. I checked out the wastebasket where I threw the cardboard. I checked out the coffee maker. When Linda walked in, I told her I had lost my teeth, and she reached behind her chair and picked them up. It was a week before I lost them again. I heated up some supper one night, take home flatbread with shaved steak and stewed tomatoes and hot peppers. I warmed it in the toaster and put it into the parlor where every night I watch the Red Sox. Often I eat supper in my mechanical chair, so I keep a tube of glue beside it. This time I found the glue but not the teeth. They weren't among the strategic piles of paper, tucked away so that I would never forget them. Where I forget them. The flatbread went cold, and I stuffed it into the take-home box and back into the refrigerator. I gummed a banana, not difficult, and tried gumming cheddar, not easy. When Kendall brought me my breakfast sandwich, I wrapped myself in a bath towel and chomped my oozy meal, slithering sausage and fried egg and English muffin into my mouth and my beard and my lap. When Linda dropped by at noon, she picked my teeth out of the wastebasket. She also had a great idea. Since my teeth flopped out after every meal, she said I should lift up my rollator seat. My rollator confronts me at all times, and plop my pink horseshoe crab into the bin under the rollator seat. Her great idea is virtually foolproof, but some fools can outdo any proof. Since Linda made her suggestion, I have lost my teeth twice. Staring at the empty bin of the rollator, I wail out loud, "Where are my teeth?" The wailing does it. My teeth are in my mouth. Okay, so it's probably fitting that our next article will come from the Mayo Clinic magazine, Understanding Alzheimer's, Your Guide to Brain Health. We're now talking about the cognitive spectrum, and this part of the article is entitled Aging That's Not Typical. At 75 years old, Frank is proud to say that the house he's lived in for the past 40 years is one that he built with his own two hands. Though his wife died years ago, he feels like he's doing okay on his own, and he doesn't ask for a lot of help from family and friends. For years, Frank liked to tinker in his workshop, fixing cars, lawnmowers, appliances, basically anything with a motor in need of repair. Almost every day, he dropped by a neighborhood diner to drink coffee and talk with other regulars. On weekends, he enjoyed visits from his grandchildren. Months ago, people began noticing changes in Frank's behavior. Now, he's constantly misplacing his keys, tools, glasses, food items, and anything else he carries in his hands. Several times, he started out for the diner, only to become confused about where he was going and turn back. But getting back home was also a struggle for him. Now, Frank can't seem to finish projects anymore. He starts something and then forgets about it. And according to one grandchild, Frank says he's recently talked with his wife. Family members are concerned about these changes affecting Frank's cognition, his ability to reason, decide, and remember. They also notice that Frank seems more depressed, anxious, and short-tempered than he used to be. They worry that whatever is causing Frank's problems will only get worse. What abnormal aging looks like. How well people retain their cognitive skills as they get older varies widely. While some people begin to struggle with memory lapses in their 50s, others retain good memory well into their 90s, and their reasoning and judgment stay sharp to boot. Changes that do occur don't seem to disrupt everyday life, and cognition remains intact. It's all part of typical aging. But not everyone has this experience. Some people, particularly after age 65, experience a sustained decline in many parts of cognition. They start having trouble processing information, especially when it's new. Memory problems and periods of confusion are frequent. They struggle to think abstractly, concentrate, express ideas clearly, and work with numbers. Some may undergo personality changes, have trouble controlling emotions, and become paranoid or withdrawn. Although these signs and symptoms are often associated with getting older, they aren't part of typical aging. They're signs and symptoms of abnormal aging. Some of Frank's changes are abnormal, and it's unlikely they're solely a result of getting older. Not every older adult experiences the kind or amounts of impairment Frank seems to have. There's a strong chance that disease-related changes in Frank's brain are causing his symptoms. These changes may have started many years before anyone noticed a difference in his personality and behavior. As the disease progresses, the symptoms may worsen, and Frank's cognition will continue to decline. Right now, Frank seems unaware that any type of problem exists. He's not concerned because he doesn't see his own failing memory and troubling behavior. But the symptoms are affecting how well he can carry out the tasks of daily living. And family members are beginning to wonder whether Frank may have a serious medical problem. And they're questioning whether it's still a good idea for Frank to be living alone. The best action the family can take would be to schedule a visit for Frank with his doctor or someone who specializes in cognitive disorders, such as a neurologist, geriatrician, or geriatric psychiatrist. Now, in our article from AARP, the magazine, the Back to Normal Health Plan, we have one more section, and this is check in on your health checkups. By mid-pandemic, an estimated 41% of U.S. adults, about 105 million people, had forgotten in-person medical care, be it routine or emergency, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. Elective surgeries were mostly shut down, and millions of people simply strayed away from doctors' offices. Here's what to ask yourself if you, too, avoided health care this past year. The key question, am I taking my important daily medications? About 37% of primary care physicians reported that their patients who had chronic conditions were in noticeably worse health resulting from the pandemic, according to a November survey. That makes sense. During the early months of COVID, routine health screenings dropped by more than half. One study found that renewal rates on a number of prescription drugs, particularly statins and arthritis medications, decreased significantly in the first few months of lockdown. Test yourself. The medicine cabinet inventory. This is simple. Do you have an ample supply of all the medicines and supplements your doctor wants you to take? And more important, are you actually taking them? Generally speaking, if you maintained your regular medications throughout the pandemic and your conditions like high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes are well controlled, you should be fine. But if you didn't, or if you've put on weight and become more sedentary during the past year, you should reach out to your doctor about options. 3 catch-up medical visits to schedule. Cancer screenings. A 2020 survey by the Epic Health Research Network revealed missed screenings nationwide totaled 285,000 for breast cancer, 95,000 for colon, and 40,000 for cervical. These represent roughly a 2/3 drop overall for each in the first months of the pandemic. These numbers have rebounded, and now that vaccinations are becoming more widespread, it's time to call your doctor, especially if you're high risk. Vision maintenance. If you already wear glasses or contacts and they haven't broken or gone missing, you probably haven't thought much about your eye doctor in the past year, like a lot of people. There are an estimated 44% fewer ophthalmology visits and procedures done from March to July 2020 than during the same months in 2019, one of the biggest dips for any medical subspecialty, according to an analysis by Strata Decision Technology. Schedule a comprehensive vision test now. Dentist. Dentists on the whole have done very well protecting their patients and themselves from COVID-19, with infection rates below 1% among dentists, according to the American Dental Association. So schedule your appointment. And now for some more items from Finding Their Heroes. Let's move on to government, persisting against tough odds. Patsy Mink was a risk taker, says Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii, a third-generation Japanese Hawaiian. Mink ran for Congress in 1964, knowing that she would be the first woman of color to be elected if she won, which she did. In Congress, Mink took a broad view of her responsibilities, championing national causes such as the creation of Medicare and the protection of equal rights. In 1972, she co-authored Title IX, the law that equalized education funding between the sexes. Patsy really stayed the course, Hirono recalls. She kept pushing for what she believed in, and that was an inspiration to me. Hirono, 73, arrived in Hawaii from Japan at almost 8 years old, along with her brother and her mother, who was fleeing a difficult marriage. I'm grateful that America afforded me many opportunities, Hirono said, but my experience as an immigrant from a poor background means I know what it's like to not have opportunities. It's why I so appreciate what Patsy did. According to Hirono, Mink's signal characteristic was persistence. She never gave up, the senator points out. She just kept fighting. Mink left her congressional seat in 1976 to run for the Senate, a race she lost. After an appointment to the U.S. State Department and time leading a Washington lobby, Mink went home to Honolulu and won a seat on the city council. Two unsuccessful races later, one for governor, one for mayor of Honolulu, she again ran for Congress in 1990 and won her seat back. She remained a potent force in state and national politics until her death from viral pneumonia in September 2002. The last time the two women saw each other was in July of that year. I was the lieutenant governor of Hawaii then, and I was running for governor, Hirono notes. We were talking about it over lunch, and Patsy looked at me and said, "Maisie, you just have to win." I always remember those words. That was the hardest race I've ever run, and I didn't win. But, like Patsy, I didn't give up. A few years later, Hirono won a seat in Congress, and in 2013, she became the first female Asian American senator. By 2017, there were two others, although one of those two recently stepped down to become the Vice President of the United States, says Hirono. I think that Patsy would be pleased. On filmmaking, this is Ronnie Del Carmen on his hero, Tyrus Wong, illuminating a life in the background. When he moved his young family to Los Angeles 30 years ago, Ronnie Del Carmen couldn't find a job. He had worked as an advertising art director in his native Philippines, but ad agencies didn't seem to be hiring. A trained commercial artist, Del Carmen eventually lucked into a position in film animation because it was the only job in town that required drawing, he recalls. The career change must have suited him. Del Carmen, 61, is now an accomplished writer and director of animated films, including Pixar's 2015 Inside Out, which he co-directed, and for whose screenplay he was nominated for an Academy Award. But Del Carmen knew nothing about animation when he took that first job. To get up to speed, he read books, including what he refers to as the main Bible of all animators, The Illusion of Life, Disney Animation. It was there that he learned about Tyrus Wong, the artist who created the spare, otherworldly backgrounds in Bambi and later helped establish the look of such classic films as Rebel Without a Cause and The Wild Bunch, all while toiling as a lower-level studio employee and without due recognition. Wong, who died in 2016, at the age of 106, had come to the U.S. with his father in 1920 as a so-called paper son, using an assumed identity to evade a federal ban on immigration from China. Wong became a U.S. citizen in 1946. Tyrus was someone who, for decades, did not get credit for the monumental design work he did, said Del Carmen. All his life he faced discrimination, but he continued to work on his art. Toward the end of his life, Wong received many overdue accolades. Still, Del Carmen wonders what Wong could have achieved if he had been allowed to take the lead on film projects. I wish I could get into a time machine, go back, and even the playing field for Tyrus. What more would he have done? We will never know. Not long ago, Del Carmen traveled to Southeast Asia, hunting for traditional stories to tell. What he returned with was a sense of wonder and belonging that connected him to that part of the world and gave him new insight into what drives people to immigrate. It was humbling. It was crushing, he reveals. And I had a quest to tell a story that would echo that journey. Del Carmen pitched the idea to Netflix, which invited him on board to make the film. To hear them say, "We want you to tell your story," was amazing to me, he remembers. It also makes me feel a debt to people like Tyrus, who never got that chance. This article from AARP, the magazine, is from the section entitled Real People. I was carjacked, but I kept my cool. When a stranger commandeered the car, Loretta Brady saved the day. And we have a picture here of two women and a baby in the car, all snuggled up together. Desiree Dupree, we were on our way to a family funeral in Kansas City last October, and we had stopped to gas up. The only reason I even got out of the car was because my grandmother's blood sugar started dropping like crazy, and she needed a donut. Loretta Brady. I'm sitting there in the back seat with my little 2-year-old great-grandson waiting for Desiree, and a man opens the door and gets into the driver's seat. I tell him, "You've got the wrong car." He doesn't say anything. He just starts turning the car on. I go, "Where are you going? You really need to get out." Again, he doesn't say anything. He just starts driving. I go, "Hey, where are you taking me?" Then I pick up the phone and call Desiree. Dupree. Honestly, I didn't believe her at first. I thought the blood sugar was messing with her brain. But then I ran outside and saw that the car was gone. Brady. I've lived in Des Moines long enough to know all the roads and landmarks. I'm telling Desiree, "Okay, we're passing the old Target. Now we're on Douglas Avenue." He didn't seem to care that I was talking on the phone. He just kept on driving, and I kept on talking. Dupree. If there ever was a female superhero to me, it is my grandma. She's like the backbone to our whole family. She's always been my protector. Whenever stuff would happen to me as a kid, I knew that Grandma's house was a safe spot, no matter what. We would watch the Golden Girls together, and everything would be okay. Even in the middle of this situation, I thought, my grandma's going to come through. Brady. I wasn't too worried about me. If I'm being truthful, I mean, I didn't want the guy to hurt me, but I was mostly worried about my great-grandson. He had been sleeping at first, but then he woke up and started crying. I started to ask myself, can I get us out of this car? Can I somehow open the doors and run? But Anthony was in his car seat with all those snaps and stuff. Or so it would have taken a long time to get him loose. Dupree. I had Grandma on one phone and 911 on another. My grandma is telling me everything she can see, and I'm repeating it to the cops. When she told me they were turning down an alley, I really thought I was going to faint. I didn't know what I was going to hear next, if I was going to hear gunshots or a car crash. Brady. It ended pretty quickly. The cops surrounded the car. They got the guy on the ground, and that was that. Dupree. My grandma really saved the day. She's an inspiration to the whole family. She's got 30 grandchildren and 16 great-grands and 3 great-greats, and she has instilled in all of us this idea that you have to live without limits and labels. It doesn't matter if you're African-American, if you're female, if you're a grandma or a great-grandma. You can get what you want as long as you're determined and you want it badly enough. Brady, I'll tell you something. I was just happy to crawl into bed and go to sleep that night. Desiree Dupree, 24, is a dialysis nurse, and her grandmother, Loretta Brady, 83, an in-home daycare provider, and they live in Des Moines, Iowa. We have time for one more inspiring story in Real Fitness Inspiration from Real People. Can he do it? Former NBAer Marques Johnson tests himself with an annual birthday challenge. Before my senior year at UCLA, the NCAA brought the slam dunk back after a 10-year ban. My trainer, Malik, told me, since people haven't seen it for a while, we're going to work all summer on dunking. We did drills where he had me dunking over and over. My senior year, I had 63 dunks. I won the first John Wooden Award, partly because of the dunk, a shot that Coach Wooden didn't care for. My friend, former UCLA player Larry Farmer, used to dunk on his birthday. He was able to do so until his late 40s. That was impressive to me. So when I was in my early 50s, I decided to dunk on my birthday in February just to see if I could still do it. The first time I did it, my son Josiah made a video and put it online. It got a lot of views, and we've been doing it ever since. This is the only time of year that I dunk, so it's always a question of, do I have one more in me? I'm as surprised as anyone when I succeed. It's a happy kind of revelation. Oh, okay, I'm not yet done yet. The annual challenge motivates me to keep fit all year long. I dealt with drug abuse in my past, and I've been sober for a number of years now. Staying in shape helps keep me on course. Spiritually, mentally, physically, psychologically, it all works together. This year I turned 65 and I can still dunk. I know sooner or later I won't be able to. Whenever I discover that I can't dunk anymore, it will be a bit of a letdown. But I'll also feel gratitude that I was able to do it this long. My video last year went viral, 6.6 million impressions on Twitter. This year, it got 5.6 million. It's a thrill to know I'm reaching so many people. Even guys that played in the NBA have said, "Man, you inspired me to get in shape and see if I can still do it." Marquez Johnson, 65, is a TV analyst for the Milwaukee Bucks and a five-time NBA All-Star small forward. He lives in Los Angeles. And now let's end with a few more words of wisdom sent to me by my friend in Canada. Electric cars will become mainstream about 2030. Cities will be less noisy because all new cars will run on electricity. Cities will have much cleaner air as well. Electricity will become incredibly cheap and clean. Solar production has been on exponential curve for 30 years, but you can now see the burgeoning impact, and it's just getting ramped up. Fossil energy companies are desperately trying to limit access to the grid to prevent competition from home solar installations, but that simply cannot continue. Technology will take care of that strategy. Health. Tricorder X will be announced this year. There are companies which will build a medical device called the Tricorder from Star Trek that works with your phone, taking your retinal scan, your blood sample, and you breathe into it. It then analyzes 54 biomarkers that will identify nearly any disease. There are dozens of phone apps out right now for your health. Welcome to tomorrow. Some of it actually arrived a few years ago. Well, folks, once again, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.